And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, or whatever time of day it is where you are, or if you listen to the podcast. Welcome to the Graham Hart Show here on Cornwall Revolution Radio and out of grism.blogspot.com, where Mammy welcomes you to the best news aggregate site on the World Wide Web. It's good to have your company. Please join us in the chat room if you wish. Click on the HTML5 chat link at the top right-hand side of the page, just below the player of your choice. And as normal, I am joined by my out of Ireland co-host, Bryzer. And all as well as good with you, Bri. Hello, Brian.
Hello, Graham.
Ah, you're there. I thought you'd left me again for a moment.
I thought you might. I had it muted, and then I hit the off button.
Well, you've had a funny old week, haven't you?
Pardon? Yeah, I've had a bad leg all week. I've done damage to it at the gym, my knee. So I've been on crutches all week, so it's been, I don't need this, you know. It's only when you get something like a bad leg or a knee injury or something like that, you realize how the normal everyday things become such a challenge, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm glad I get over this. I'm getting over the worst of it slowly, but it's going to be another week, I'd say. But anyway.
Well, the older we get, the slower it gets to do, you know, to everything to repair. I'm still good with the MMS. I'm putting it on my knees, and it's like I've never had knee pain before. It's so easy to forget all the pain I had in my knees, and I used to complain about it day in, day out. And since I've been using the MMS on my knees topically, it's just been incredible. The pain is gone, and I just, you know, it's gone, and I forget all about it.
It's funny how you mentioned that, Graham, because I sprayed some MMS on it yesterday a couple of times, and that today I noticed the pain has receded. So that's interesting too, you know.
Right. Did you not do that right away, Brian?
No, I didn't think of it really because I was just, you know, you compress it with ice and lay down, elevate the leg and all that. That's all I was doing. And then I just thought, oh, hang on, I'll just try a bit of MMS, see what happens here, you know. So I'm not saying it's working, but it seems to have helped a little bit.
Yeah,
so
I think it does. I just find it works from the moment I put on. Anyway, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. Tonight my guest is Deanna Spingola. I'm delighted to have her with us. Good evening, Deanna.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very good, thank you. And yourself?
I'm well, thank you. And I learned something new about MMS. I hadn't thought about putting it on topically, although I've done it in the past. My husband used it, but I really haven't used it myself. I have ingested it, but I haven't used it topically.
Well,
I learned something.
Yes, I tried it. Bryzer said to me about it, as we call him Dr. Bryzer here, because he knows so many remedies. He said to me, I've taken it, ingested it as well, but I was only sort of doing it like a health drink. I never done it really properly. But then I was reminded by Bryce, who said, well, you can use this topically, you know, and I've had terribly sore knees, Deanna. They are awful, so painful, the joints. And I started putting it on my knees. What do we do, Bry? Is half a pint of water, distilled water. And 10 drops.
Yeah, it was up to 10 drops, whatever you're okay with, you know. Ooh. The more you put on, the better, you know, and just spray it on any kind of, if you have a joint problem, if you have any kind of burn or any skin issues, scar issues, things like that, it does heal.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. Great.
There's a lot to it. So yeah, I'd use it topically for stuff too, you know, so. It's been totally demonized, as we all know. It's called bleach. People say, oh, how can you take that bleach? And it's disgraceful what's going on, actually. I mean, there's a big thing here in Ireland where they're trying to ban it, you know, but they're not having much luck with that.
Well, that's good.
But there is a very strong kind of move to have it pushed, because seemingly some lady tried to treat her autistic child with MMS, and there was this woman's trying to, she's abusing her child by giving her bleach. Oh my God.
Oh, dear.
Hang her from the lamppost, you know. Oh my God. Terrible. So this is a crazy world we live in.
It is.
It is crazy indeed. What are you working on at the moment, Deanna? Are you still researching, writing, or what's going on in your life at the moment?
Oh, I'm writing on some articles, and I'm also writing about, I'm writing a book about occult religion, not occult, but a cult religion that I formerly belonged to. And so I've always got something going on besides my radio program.
And that goes out when?
It's on Saturday afternoon between 3 and 6 Central Standard Time, Chicago time, on RBN, Republic Broadcasting.
Great, great. Well, one of the main reason we asked you on, Diana, I think it was a couple of shows back, someone just popped up something about Sandy Hook. I can't think what it was, and there was some things said in the chat room, and one of the ladies, Lily Valley, said, Diana is very upset with the criticism that she's got, from the so-called truth movement. I thought, well, if Deanna's upset, let's have Deanna on, because, I found your work, Deanna, through, back in the days when I was chasing Dennis Wise around the internet. And,
yes. And I thought, isn't he terrific?
Oh, he's amazing. He's an amazing guy. He really is.
Love that man.
He's fantastic. And, this was at the time, and I'm a post-war baby. So finding out about World War II was come as such a shock. And when I found Dennis's work, it was just incredible. And I was just trying to find every interview I could find. And that's how I came to find you first.
Amazing.
But go into...
Well, most of my work in my trilogy was based on looking at government records, commissions, accurate history. And I did use government sources. The best place to find out what the government is trying to do to you or what it has done to you is to look at their sources. Look at the official records. If you want to know what is in the vaccines that your child is receiving, you go to the CDC, you go to the FDA. If you want to find out what the government views you as a guinea pig, then you view those records. You view the records, the bills that they are passing in Congress. If you want to find out about weather warfare, you look at the bills in Congress. Congress and the official records are really the best place. Despite the fact that we are all anti-government, the government records are really the best place. For instance, in my work, I have refuted several myths that have been a part of the so-called alternative media. And one of those myths was that the Federal Reserve Act was passed when everyone had left Congress for the Christmas holiday and there weren't that many people there, and they just kind of slithered it through. And that's not the case. There was a majority in both the House and the Senate. They passed it with a full majority. One of the other huge myths in the alternative media is that Andrew Jackson said that he was going to get rid of the bankers. But if you look at the State Department records, you'll find that the Secretary of State facilitated using the Rothschild Bank in London as the bank for the United States to collect fees in Europe. And so they were quite tight. Actually, Andrew Jackson was kind of in bed with the Rothschilds. But that's not what we hear in the alternative media.
Right.
And so I used a lot of I use original records. I use primary sources. The primary source is the record that was created at the time of an event. A secondary source is something that someone has compiled, like a YouTube video. Watching YouTube videos is not research.
No.
That is a secondary source. Usually by somebody whose name you do not know, you do not get any citations, you don't know where they got the information. If you want to look up the information, you wouldn't be able to because they're There are no citations. In all of my work, you will find that footnotes probably take up about half of the book. And that is also true with my book on Sandy Hook. And it's really interesting. I wasn't really upset so much, and thanks to Lily Valley for mentioning that. But I have been interviewed about my book on Sandy Hook by people in the alternative media about five times. I have been marginalized, and when people think that they know the truth, they're not going to look any further. And so they're not going to open their mind to something that was produced. Well, the book came out in February of 2015. That was over 2 years after the official reports came out. It was also 3 years after the event, December 14th, 2012. And within six days, and by 6 weeks, the framing had already taken place. In other words, there were people who decided what had happened, and those are the same things that people still believe.
Right.
They believe many things. And if they look at the records, if they even look at the timeline, I'm a big proponent of timelines. So I have a timeline that I associate with the Screaming Sandy Hook book, and which can be found on my website, spingola.com. But I'm just amazed at the lack of, well, fair and balanced reporting in the alternative media. Whereas the people who decided that they knew all about it within 6 days or 6 weeks are on dozens and dozens of radio programs. And I just have to question, gosh, is this the alternative media? It is much easier to control a group than it is one individual. And so when you have a consensus opinion and you attempt to introduce another opinion in a group, you are going to be marginalized and pretty much vilified, which is what has occurred. Despite my previous work and despite the fact that I waited, I researched. I didn't speculate, but I can understand people want answers immediately. When there's an event that occurs that is so horrific, they want answers immediately. And the media is trying to get answers from everybody that they can. Anybody that will talk to a media person, they really will give whatever information they happen to have. And you have to also wonder, the first thing that I saw was the Robbie Parker video.
Yes.
And it was 27 seconds. 27 seconds within 12 hours of the event. Now, he had gone to a meeting at his church where people were attempting to buoy him up and to help him. And he went out, and CNN was there. CNN. Now, you really have to ask yourself, is CNN really biased? And I talk about CNN, Anderson Cooper, in my book. And Anderson Cooper, as we know, was with the CIA, which might be kind of like being with the mafia. Do you ever actually leave the CIA? And when you look at the composition of mainstream media, keep in mind that the CIA was created to protect corporations, but I don't want to get too far afield. Okay, so Robbie Parker's video, the video that was created from the CNN interview, it was CNN that was interviewing when he came out of the church, and they just used whoever put this video together, used 27 seconds out of a 19-minute interview. Okay. Now, why didn't they just give us the entire interview? It's because they had an agenda. Their objectives was to make him look bad and to attribute to him, well, they said, he's an actor. He's just an actor. He didn't lose a child or he wouldn't be smiling. Well, there were other people who have lost children. People who lose children don't look like they've just tasted a lemon all the time, every minute of every day, for days on end.
It did look
pretty
damning.
It just doesn't happen that way.
I have to be honest, Deanna. This is not my subject. False flags are really not my thing. I'm more interested in historical events and and what goes on in the news that I can sort of really get my head around and research. Like, for instance, we did South Africa a couple of weeks ago and what's going on there.
Oh, it's terrible.
It's horrific. But I must confess. So that is not really my strength, is to look at these false flags. In fact, I don't look at them at all. But I have to say, Deanna, that although it was only 27 seconds, I fully take on board what you're saying about the half hour. I'd like to see the old interview, actually. But that 27 seconds did make him look pretty damning that it was a hoax.
Don't you think that was, the intent?
Yes.
Of
yes.
Just putting 27 seconds. And you can look at the entire interview. And during that interview, he shed tears. He talked about his child. He is a physician's assistant. And you can find his license online. He's not an actor. And I also appreciate history. And that's why I created the timeline associated with screening Sandy Hook, because this didn't happen in a bubble. This event did not happen just without any kind of things that happened before. Now, I also do a lot of health things. I concentrate on vaccines and some of the other horrible psychiatric drugs. And so my timeline, believe it or not, starts in 1847 with the establishment of the AMA, which was a private, secretive organization of allopathic physicians. And so we have to wonder, why would Deanna go back to 1847 in discussing Sandy Hook? But it makes sense if you, like I say, it didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened as a result of other things that happened way before that. And so that's, and I really, when I saw that video, I thought, well, that's interesting, but I want to see all of it. I like to see the whole story. I don't want people to spoon feed me something. I want to make my decisions based on the entire body or the entire video. I'm not going to make a judgment about somebody in 27 seconds. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to me. It's not fair to anybody. And so I'd ask a couple of people to be on my program who seemed to have, well, they had created a video and had made some other remarks about Sandy Hook, saying that it was a false flag. And I don't even like to say false flag, because false flag usually think of countries, but that it was a hoax. They were saying, oh, it's a hoax, it didn't happen. And one of the ladies that I invited to be on my program had made a video, and she said, you don't know the material. And I'm thinking, I don't know the material. What material? Is there something I'm missing here? Is there something that I'm supposed to know that qualifies me to interview this person? And so I thought, well, if I don't know the material, then I just better look it up and see what it is that this person has said, so that I might become knowledgeable about the material. And so I looked at this person's video, and I was astounded. there was so much, well, there was, it was looped for one thing. There was part that was looped, and there were just so many inconsistencies. I just couldn't believe it. And I thought, and I did three parts, part one, two, and three, that I put on my website, and then I discontinued that project. I was going to go through the whole thing and do, I don't know how many, however many parts it would take. But I discontinued the project to work on the book about San Diego. And the reason that I decided, well, I didn't actually decide, I was asked to write a book on San Diego. And I started to do that, and 3 months later, the entity that asked me to write the book said, oh, you know, I don't think we're going to have you write the book. Oh, and by the way, we know that we said that we were going to send you to Newtown with a video camera, you and another person, so that you could really evaluate things and interview people. We're not going to do that either. And so I thought, what the heck is going on here? So, inasmuch as I had already self-published three books, I thought, okay, I'm already started on the book. I'm going to continue. And so I researched that book for over 2 years.
Okay.
Research takes time. Finding knowledge takes time. For instance, Dennis Wise, he didn't just decide in 6 days or 6 weeks that he was going to put everything he knew about Adolf Hitler into a movie. He researched a long time. And that is what anybody has to do in order to know their subject and to understand what they're writing about. And you, with Sandy Hook, one could not really refute or talk about Sandy Hook until the official records came out. But by the time the official records came out, which took a little over a year, and by that time, the hoaxers or the deniers had a year to spin their web or to spin their hoaxes. And so you have a lot of people in the alternative media who believe those views, and those people never change their story. It doesn't matter whether you introduce, whether you answer their questions or refute their claims, they never change. They continue to say the same things all the time on all the radio programs. And so, but if the officials had come out in 2 months with the official report, they would have said, oh, it's too soon. It's too soon. They probably made this all up. See, they had 27 deaths that they had to research each one. They had to go back and they had to have closure for each individual that perished. And so it did take a long time. They had two big crimes, one huge, huge crime scene that they had to take care of, plus the Lanza house. So it did take time. But that time allowed the hoaxers or the deniers a lot of time to spin their stories, which is unfortunate. Because, and I don't blame people for believing it, because it is so pervasive that it's kind of like other things that people believe. And the other thing too, it isn't the official records that you have to really be careful of. It's the commissions that are conducted after the official records come out. For instance, the Warren Commission, the Roberts Commission, the 9/11 Commission. And these commissions come out and they devise their view of the event, whatever event they're talking about, and give the public what they consider to be true or what they want the public to accept as true. And they also give recommendations. And if you look at the commission that was designed or created after Sandy Hook, you would be absolutely blown away, because what it's calling for is more psychiatric drugs and more screening for children. There are children who are infants who are now taking Prozac, are being given Prozac, which is an SSRI.
Right.
And this is a result. They're saying, oh, well, Adam Lanza didn't have access or didn't have access to enough health care. He didn't have access to enough psych drugs. So we need to make sure that this doesn't happen again. And so the things that occurred in Connecticut as a result are devastating for the children that live there.
Okay.
Diana, can I ask you, what was your initial reaction when Sandy Hook happened? Because, but it's myself and Graham, you know, we saw the YouTube videos and all the photographs, and yeah, they look as dodgy as hell, right? All of them. So, and then you see people pointing out, like, you know, especially the guy Carver, who was the police coroner, wasn't it?
He was the coroner.
Yeah.
And he had just come from performing autopsies on 11 children, 4 hours before. And he was in front of a huge group of people, and you don't see the huge group of people that he is in front of. You see him, and he is trying to answer questions. He was the medical examiner for a long time before this occurred. And what you probably saw too was not so much an objective photo or film of him, but you probably saw one that had text on it, which made him look bad. So these things are presented to make him or anybody else look bad. But he did perform the autopsies, not all of them. He had to have people come in from New York, the medical examiner's office from New York. Now, New York is 73 miles away from Newtown. And some people would like others to think that Newtown is just this isolated, very isolated place where evil things have happened. But it really is just 73 miles from New York, from Manhattan. A lot of people may live in Newtown and go to New York or Manhattan to work. And then you also have to look at the history of Adam Lanza. You have to look at the history of his family. And I think that is something that no one has done. They haven't said, okay, what kind of a person was this? What they've said was he didn't exist, when in fact he did. Or they say, oh, this guy he looks weird. He looks really weird. Now, there are some people who have their irises in their eyes have white around it. Can't remember what it's called. It's called, where they show a lot of white. And when they're looking straight onto a camera, they look kind of weird. They look maybe even photoshopped. But that's even, there are several people that have this distinguishing factor in their eyes. And I'm trying to find the word for it. And it's just very interesting. The other thing too is that did you have another question? I'll look for this.
I was just it was for me again, the Robbie Parker was striking.
It was striking to me. I thought, yes, gosh, this is just doesn't make sense.
Quite.
So I looked at the entire thing.
Fine.
I don't want somebody telling me I can only see 27 seconds of something.
No.
That's not fair. That's not right. Hey, I want to see the whole thing.
Yeah,
Show me all of it.
I totally agree. And I did have a quick look at the Wayne Carver interview as well. I think when he said that, he didn't know how many children, how many boys and girls were killed, I found that a bit strange. That he would come out to be an official sort of person and a professional man that he is not to be able to say.
Okay. That was Saturday morning. That was Saturday morning. He had been working all night. They had been doing autopsies all night. Okay. Then he appeared at this, and he didn't do all of the autopsies.
No.
Okay. He did not do all of the autopsies. There would be no reason for him to know exactly how many of either sex. And the names of the children were released later on in the day. And that's another thing that people were saying. Oh, they won't release the names of the children. Well, yes, they did release the names of the children. But he was working all night. They set up an autopsy tent there at the school. And keep in mind that these children, when they were shot, were usually grouped together, huddled together.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even want to think about that kind of scene.
Yeah, yeah, mass shooting, yeah. Absolutely. The other thing, I'm just shooting from the hip here, really, Diana.
That's okay.
I thought there was, if I recall, there was a lack of ambulances around as well, and no.
Oh no. Okay. What they staged every single MCI, mass casualty event, mass casualty incident, has a place where they stage the ambulances. They're not going to, and that was just down the road, just a very short distance at the firehouse. The staging area was the firehouse. For instance, the staging area at Columbine was not at the school. It was a short distance away because you had a lot of people gathered around. You had parents coming to figure out what was going on. So everybody had to be kept away from the crime scene. You don't want people traipsing through the crime scene.
Sure.
And so the staging area was, I'm not sure how many feet, but it was right there. And that's how they stage mass casualty incidences. And they have toe tags for the other thing people were saying, only physicians can call somebody dead. Well, if that were the case, the toe tags wouldn't have the black on it. They have black, green, yellow, and red. And if nobody could presume somebody dead, and it's a presumption of death. And then when the physician then gives the official death. Okay?
Okay.
But the people, the nurses that were there, and somebody said, oh, they wouldn't let any of the EMTs in. That is a lie. Three of them were allowed into the school. They were the first responders, and they were the ones that assisted the people that were still viable. Okay?
Okay.
And there weren't that many. There were a couple that they brought out, Hammond they brought out. They wheeled her out in a chair because she had a foot injury. There weren't that many people survived.
Yeah, yeah. There weren't any walking injured, so to speak.
Right.
Okay. So where did it start for you, Diana, with your research when you started to look into this? Like I said, you looked at the official government statement?
No, I looked at was some of the so-called research, quote-unquote, that people were promoting as the truth. And when I found that this one video that was very, very popular was going around, it was gone viral, so they say, and the video was looped in places where it showed people going in circles around the firehouse. Well, they weren't going in circles. The video was looped over and over and over. And if you look up in the left-hand corner, you can see this silver car going back and forth, back and forth. It's because the video was looped. And some of the other speculative statements in the video led me to say, this isn't research. This is garbage. And the person also used the Newtown Bee insignia without permission and used what was called a bus tour. Now, somebody said, oh, the school was closed in 2008. Well, that's not true because the bus tour that the Newtown Bee had this back to school kind of a presentation of video. And so they had the bus going along and to the school. And this was in 2009. So obviously the school was open. You could see the school was open and the bus tour was created in 2009, which is contradictory to another person who said that the school was closed in 2008. Now, the reason that this person said that the school was closed in 2008 is because this person said, well, the Wayback Machine says that there was no internet activity. Now, the Wayback Machine does not monitor internet activity. What the Wayback Machine does, it's a robot, and it goes along and it picks up, and it's from a nonprofit. The Wayback Company, they started it in San Francisco, and it's a nonprofit. They don't have all that money to be doing anyway. They just take a picture of a website every few weeks or every few months or whenever. That does not mean they monitor internet activity. Now, every single school in Sandy Hook, in Newtown, every single school in Newtown had what they call the robot text.txt, which means that this will not allow the Wayback Machine to take a picture of your website. So, you could say, well, if they're saying that the school was closed in 2008 because the Wayback Machine does not show any images of that school's website, then you'd have to say, well, all the schools in Newtown were closed because all of them were taken care of by the same IT guy. And so the person who states that there was no internet activity after 2008 is an ignoramus and does not understand the function of the Wayback Machine. And also, if you look at the school pictures, and there are hundreds that show computers. There's a computer lab. There are iPads all over. There's all kinds of smart technology that was manufactured after 2008. You had the smart screens, smart tables, which the smart table alone costs about $6,000. So people would have to believe, gosh, if they staged the school and they made this a prop, would they spend thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars to do that? And if you look at some of the magazines in the lobby that were dated 2012 and some of the other things. But the problem is this. People do not have the time, the inclination, maybe the skills to look at 7,000 pages of documents. You have to be very dedicated, a little obsessive compulsive, to spend 12 hours a day looking at the documents.
Yes.
And most people are not going to do that. They're going to take the easy way out. They're going to assume that the people who are giving them this information are honest and are not, you know, they're going to make assumptions.
Yeah.
About people. And for instance, one of the big key opinion leaders is somebody that when he set up a website, lied about the references. He set up a website for this little organization that he had, and he lied about the references. He used people that were dead. Now, how are you going to use a reference for somebody that's dead if the person who wants to say, oh, I'm going to talk to so-and-so and see what they think about this guy's organization? Well, the guy, you know, the lady's dead. Mm-hmm. And if you lie about that, and you lie about your experience, and you lie about your credentials, and you lie and lie and lie, why would anybody believe their claims about Sandy Hook? So it's not only that you have to look at the records themselves, the data itself, you have to look at who's producing this stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
See, another issue that I would have, Deanna, as well, is Adam Lanza himself. Like, if he was drugged up, as you maintain he was, how did he have such a success rate?
Okay. Adam Lanza, he learned to shoot, believe it or not, at the age of 4. His mother grew up on a farm. She had 2 brothers and a sister. She loved to shoot. And she and her friend used to take their boys out to the range. They're in New Hampshire before they moved to Newtown. And he learned to shoot at the age of 4. He also played a lot of war games, video war games, which DARPA worked with the military and with the so-called entertainment field, and they created all of these video games that made any child in America a sharpshooter. Okay? He also went to the range with his mother when they were still on speaking terms. Now, the other thing is that when he wasn't like doped up, because he was cognizant enough to do what he did. Now, Mary Ellen O'Toole, who was a profiler for the FBI, said that many times that shooters will go off their drugs because they want to be as sharp as they possibly can be so that they can do what they intend to do. He didn't just flip out one day. This was something that he was planning for a long time. He belonged to a group on the internet, and he used the name Smiggles. He belonged to a group that studied the Columbine shooting. He belonged to another group that also was into mass murder. He had, if you look at his history, which I have given in my book, he did not learn to speak until he was 3. He was a headbanger. He was born right before they decided to give hepatitis B to all infants who left the hospital. He was also born at a time right before the CDC increased all of their vaccines. People who are born, boys particularly, are more susceptible to vaccine damage than girls. But boys aged between 3 and 17, born before 1999, received thimerosal in the hepatitis B vaccine. They were three times more likely to be diagnosed with autism. Now, he was diagnosed with autism spectrum, Asperger's syndrome. And he was born, in 1991. No, he was born in 1992. His parents got married June 6, 1981. They had Ryan, their first child, in 1988. Educated people, and Peter and Nancy Lanza were educated. Educated people are more apt to get their children fully vaccinated than people who aren't as educated, because that's just the way it is. And I'm quite certain that he was fully vaccinated. So, he didn't learn to speak until he was three. He was a headbanger. By the age of six, he was, or even before they left New Hampshire, by the age of four, he was considered special needs. The other thing about Adam Lanza is that he was born C-section, which means that he did not get all of his cord blood. He didn't get, when you're born, C-section, they clip the cord immediately, and all the cord blood is then given or sold to a cord blood bank instead of the child getting their blood that they need. So he was born C-section. He resisted affection. By the time he was four, he was a special needs child in New Hampshire. By the time he was six, they moved to Newtown because his father had gotten a job with General Electric, and they bought the house in Newtown in the Sand Hook area on 2 acres, big, huge house, isolated, big, huge house. And he then was probably introduced to Ritalin because he was just a very rambunctious kid. He was very focused. He threw tantrums. One of their neighbors, who moved to the area just about the same time that the Lanzas moved, used to babysit for Adam because Adam was too much for his brother to handle. And so this neighbor, who now lives in California, said Adam Lanza was on medication, which was probably for ADHD or ADD. It was probably Ritalin, because he said he would be super focused, and if you interrupted him in any way, that he would throw a tantrum that you would expect a three-year-old to throw. He would throw a tantrum. He was still throwing tantrums at the age of 20. In fact, when Nancy was leaving to go to New Hampshire for a little getaway, in one of the tantrums that he threw, his head started bleeding. And if you look at the house, and most people aren't going to look at all the pictures of the house. They're just not going to do it.
Deanna, do you have evidence of all of this?
Yes, I do.
All the tantrums and all these growing problems. You do, yeah.
And
that's the thing is no one's seen any proof of any of this stuff. So
that's because they don't, if you think you have the truth, you're not going to look anywhere else. That's just the way it is. And I have, all of my books are fully footnoted. I have probably 1400, I'm not sure exactly how many, I have to look. But I have probably 1,400 footnotes. I never write anything. And same with my articles. If I write an article, anybody who writes anything has a responsibility to their reader, or if they're doing a video, everybody who produces any kind of information that they are trying to indoctrinate the public with has a response, or indoctrinate or share, has responsibility to tell that person, their reader, where they got the information, so that the reader can go to the very, very same source and see for themselves where that information came from. And if your work is not sourced, if you don't have citations, if you don't have footnotes, it's no better than hearsay.
Yep, I agree on that. Yeah, and that's why I've always been such a big fan of David Irving. Because David Irving actually went to see the documentation.
Absolutely.
And I think that is very important. Deanna, did you, which I find interesting, I believe Lily said that you have spoken with the parents?
I've spoken with the bus driver. I've spoken with several people. And, yes, I have spoken with the parents. Not all of them.
No.
Yeah. This is the thing about all of this, is that we see stuff on YouTube and we see stuff, photographs and everything, and we're going, as you said, there's this kind of consensus that, oh, it has to be fake because look at this, look at this, look at this. And then you've got the other side. Well, here's the actual research. And from where I stand, from where I stood when I looked at Sandy Hook back in the day, was definitely, it looked fake to me, the whole thing. Then again, you know, Dan, I haven't read your book, and also I wasn't there, so I don't know. And then of course, if you are to go into a court of law and to produce evidence as a witness, YouTube videos and photographs, it's not going to stand up. That's the thing. So we have to, I think it's important that we look at all angles of all of this. Let's look if there was fakery going on here, and let's just thrash it all out. But there's, as I said, I think it's gotten so divisive, sadly. And, but you know, there are still a lot of questions that people put in, and, I've been sent quite a few of them. So we're 5 minutes to the break, but we'll just, one of the questions is, we haven't seen any concrete evidence that any child died. Have you got that? Have you got evidence of that?
All righty. Anyone can send to get a death certificate. Now, in America, in the United States, you never see a crime scene. And people say, well, what about the crime scene from Columbine? Well, that was released by somebody that had access to it that was not authorized to release it. We never see dead bodies. It's just, we see dead bodies in the movie and we kind of correlate that to our lives and say, well, gosh, we didn't see any dead bodies. Well, this is, real life isn't a movie. You don't see dead bodies. Do you really think that those 40 parents want to see their child's dead body all over the internet? And that is exactly what people would do.
Yeah, and what about parents haven't been allowed to see their children, allegedly?
Okay. That is a fallacy, a big fallacy. People do not identify their spouses or the victims at the crime scene. They identify them either at the morgue or at the funeral home. Now, the reason that they took photos, and Dr. Carver mentioned this, they took photos of the clothes so that they could figure. There were 400, I think it was 456 children that were in that, that were enrolled in 2012. They had to take these photos and have the parents identify their children from photos. And the children that did survive and go to the firehouse, well, obviously they didn't need to be, you know, worry about photos. But they did photograph the children. You can't have 40 parents traipsing into the crime scene, bawling, and seeing their child in a bloody pile of children. What the heck? Are people nuts that they would assume that that is how it would be? Would you want to see your child like that? Of course not.
Yeah, it's understandable. And that is
the way that they do it throughout the country. Okay?
Well, going back, Deanna, to having spoken with some of the parents, have you any recorded interviews or written testament?
I do have some recorded, yes.
And do they feature in the book?
Pardon me?
Do they feature in the book?
No, because those are private conversations. But I do talk about the bus driver, and but I have not divulged private conversations.
Okay.
I do belong to, for instance, the Parker Five. They call them Parker Five. And she has a website, and she sends out a message, and so I've communicated with her. Okay. And
mm-hmm. It's a shame that couldn't have been done under a pseudonym.
Yeah. Just another question, Deanna. It says, according to the official story, Adam Lanza was found with his older brother's ID and it was not stolen. However, older brother Ryan, who officials say is very cooperative, claims not to have seen his brother since 2010.
That's true.
Where would Adam get this ID, and why does this such use of this not qualify as a theft?
Okay. There were a lot of Ryan left a lot of his stuff at the house. That's what kids do. Or children do. Even if they go off and they move out of the family home, did you take everything that you owned from your family home the minute you left? No. There were files. And Ryan was normal. Ryan was the good kid. Ryan went to college. Ryan got a job. Ryan was successful. And Adam wasn't. Adam was a mess. An absolute mess. He did that to incriminate his brother. When he shot his mother, he put the gun up to her eye and shot her four times. Once, presumably, for each member of the family. And Adam was very angry. The whole thing was just a very, very sad thing. And I feel very, very close to this because I have gone into the records. I have copies of her making notes about what she was going to do on the 14th. And she was a very linear thinker. And I'm putting articles together showing these things. Just for instance, they say, some people say, oh, the house was staged. Well, no, it could have been staged. It just couldn't have been staged. And I go through I've gone through each room, and there's pictures the paper that they have to take in search warrant. Okay, there's search warrants. And a couple of fools said, oh, those search warrants are so that the preparers could be judged. No, they weren't. They were search warrants. They had to get a search warrant to go into that house and to look at everything. The other thing, too, is that, and I want to get back to Anderson Cooper. On January the 11th of 2012, on CNN, his program, 360 Degrees, he opened his program by saying, we begin tonight keeping them honest with a story that is frankly hard to believe. You're going to want to sit down for this one. Then he refers to the horrific shootings in Newtown, in which 26 people were killed, and says that tonight we expose a number of people who are claiming that the Sandy Hook shootings were staged. Cooper spent much of the program talking about the horrifically outrageous claims of Dr. James Tracy. He even showed a picture of him, and Cooper said, normally they would not give such claims airtime. He also mentioned that Alex Jones had been on Piers Morgan's show on January 7th. Did the producers and directors all receive the same warning memo, or was it merely a series of coincidences and common interest? And purporting that he did not want to give airtime to such claims, he proceeds to do just that, including repeating his name, Dr. James Tracy, repeating where he worked, and implying and said that he had a blog. And he said, Cooper then reveals that Tracy, who claims the shooting did not happen, has a blog on which he wrote, and I quote, "One is left to inquire, whether the Sandy Hook shooting ever took place, at least in the way law enforcement authorities and the nation's news media have described," quote unquote. Okay, so thinking back, CNN is the one that filmed Robbie Parker outside of his church. And now we have CNN, Anderson Cooper, CIA, who says he doesn't want to give all this attention to James Tracy. And then he proceeds to give all this attention to James Tracy. Now, what do you think people were doing when he announced that James Tracy had a blog and he was making all these claims? They were looking up James Tracy's website. Hello? This is where the alternative media and the mainstream media kind of converge. And what Anderson Cooper was doing... Now, remember that the CIA protects corporations. They protect the medical industry. CNN probably runs as many pharmaceutical commercials as anybody else does. Now, there's only two countries in the world that run pharmaceutical commercials on their TV. The United States and New Zealand. Okay, so you have this convergence of CIA, Anderson Cooper, saying that Tracy doesn't believe it happened. So you have all these people who raced to Tracy's website, and he was bombarded with new visitors. Now, if somebody doesn't question that, you have to really wonder, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, there's some strange things. So definitely, the whole thing is just a big muddying of the waters, and no one knows, seems to know what the hell is going on here.
That's the whole point. You fling out all of these various theories. Everything, it seems inconsistent, so that you are not able to decide anything. That's the whole point. You produce all these theories to keep everybody fighting and wondering, and that's the whole point.
Yeah, because, you know, I'm quite sure that the media are very well capable of faking a lot of stuff, and I think there's a lot of fake stuff that has definitely happened. I think we're all quite well aware of this.
Sure.
But, you know, where I come from, I tend to go with logic and reason. I have to look at facts. And
okay.
I still have to, you know, the only facts I have, Deanna, is what I have seen on YouTube and whatever, right?
Okay,
you've gone a lot further, and you've written your book, and you can source everything that you've written, which is great. So I think people
producing facts, or are they producing propaganda? You don't know.
Well, I know, that's what I mean. No, I don't know.
Yeah.
So go ahead, John.
I'm sorry. I'm on a rant here.
You're okay, Diana. Keep going. There's no problem.
Do we really expect that propaganda is just going to stop at the alternative media gate and say, oh, everything in the alternative media is true, and everything in the mainstream media is false. People in the alternative media seem to be black and white thinkers. There is truth in both. You have to be a critical thinker in order to discern what is true and what is false. And it gets back to sources. Where did the information come from? Is it a primary source? Is it secondary and made up?
Yep.
Okay, well,
this
I think...
Sorry, Graham, go ahead.
No, exactly, Bryce. I totally agree. There is a mishmash between the alternative media now and mainstream. I just look at CNN and any of these. I'm not going to believe anything they say, but maybe they sling a few nuggets in. I think, as you've said before, Bryce, we weren't there.
We weren't there at all.
If you know, your truth is your day. And that's all, that's the only truth you've got. And if you're going to find out anything more than that, it has to be deeply researched. And, Deanne has done this, and written this book. So she's researched it more than I have. And I'm not making, going to any side here because I've not researched it. But we'll come back and talk more about that in a short while, folks. We'll stay with, Deanna on this subject. And anything else he wants to talk to in the second hour. But I thought first we'd take a little 5 minute break now. And because it's you, Deanna, I thought, and because you and I are both big fans of Dennis Wise, we would have a little bit of music and a little bit of talk when he made this wonderful production of, Ray Haggins and, produced by Dennis Wise. Have a listen, folks. See you in about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Now I'm gonna drop something on y'all that a lot of people ain't gonna like when they hear what I'm about to say. But that's a man who these people convinced us was a madman. These people that I'm talking about told us that this man was a satanic agent. He was a mass murderer. These illegitimate people called Jews convinced the world that a man named Adolf Hitler was a madman. And we all grew up understanding that Hitler was a tyrant, that he was a madman. But I'm gonna be honest with you. After doing some research on this, I found out, and this is my opinion, that it was these liars and deceivers that Adolf Hitler was trying to cleanse the world of. You control what people think. There's a statement that says, "And you shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free." Of God consciousness on this planet. It's called the swastika. We have come to hate the swastika because we've been taught by these people that the swastika is a symbol of Nazi Germany. That's not true. Now let me take you to school right for a minute here. from ancient Egypt, 10,000 years B.C. And if you look at the swastika, what you will see, those of you of the craft, you will see four squares. Representing 90 degree angles. You multiply 4 times 90. You come up with a perfect circle of 360 degrees, which represents the sun, the giver of life. So the swastika was actually an ancient Kemetic symbol that represented God consciousness. Now I know a lot of folks who hear this ain't gonna like what I'm saying. I really don't give a damn. My job is to tell you the truth, like it or not. If you don't like it, do what you feel you gotta do, but I'm gonna tell it. But when I stand before the Creator, I'm gonna hold my head up high and say, I open the eyes of the blind by telling them the truth that they didn't want told.
An absolutely immense promotion of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, ladies and gentlemen. If you've not seen Dennis Asir's, why? I know you're a big fan of Dennis, Deanna.
I am.
I do find that that clip absolutely very moving, and it really hits home.
Indeed.
So where do we go? What would you like to add, Deanna? I would like to talk more about the report that you've done and the 7,000 page, I think it was it 7,000 word or 7,000 word official document and what you found in there?
Oh my gosh. Okay. What,
that's your
some
camera
of the things that I found in there.
We should find that should get us through to the end of the show that day.
Scream Sandy Hook. I've written ScreamSandyHook.net. ScreamSandyHook.net.
Okay.
I have written some articles there that complement what is in the book. Some of them maybe don't complement what's in the book. I've talked about the some of the psych drugs for children, which is something that was passed just very recently. I've talked about I hate to bring up names, but one of the persons that is a big contributor to much of what people believe is actually on 2 psych drugs. And I have court records that verify that. So you have to just kind of wonder that that is the case.
Just a few more questions, Deanna, if you don't mind, just so we can get these out there. So
sure.
Just want to hear your view again, you know. okay. According to the official story, Adam Lanza was wearing a black outfit with a mask and bulletproof vest. Why would he want to?
No, it doesn't say bulletproof vest in the official records. It was not a bulletproof vest. It was a Eddie Bauer type vest that had pockets. So
it wasn't the official story is what you're saying?
No, that is something that the hoaxers said. The official story does not, the official story has the photos of what he was wearing. He was not wearing a bulletproof vest. So you have to separate what you've heard on YouTube and what's in the official story. Or what's in the report. Have you read the report?
No.
Neither of us have right now.
No.
Because
okay.
It said after 6 months to a year of looking at this and all the infighting that was going on, I got fed up, to be quite honest.
Sure.
And I said, I'm out of here, you know.
You know what? I think a lot of people feel that way, yeah. And they don't want to hear any more about it.
Yeah.
But they go away believing that it was a hoax.
Yeah.
And that's the saddest thing ever. They say, oh, the funerals were all fake. Do you realize that the principal had 1,000 people attended her funeral, walked past her open casket. They were lined up around the block. So are we going to say, oh, those 1,000 people lied? Of course not.
Sure.
But you never hear about this from the hoaxers or the people that we call the deniers. They don't want you to think that it happened. And I have to think, okay, who benefits by people not believing that this happened?
Yeah, that's a good question. Who do you think?
The pharmaceutical industry.
Okay.
Because
what about the gun control issue then?
Well, I'll tell you what. Usually when this happens, people run out and buy a gun. It was not a FEMA drill. The FEMA manual was not a real manual because FEMA does not produce any manuals. They let each state take care of their own production, and that was a fabrication. And it wasn't a FEMA drill. Period. Plain and simple. And the people who benefit are big pharma. Because they don't, for instance, when Abel Child, did a lawsuit against, they wanted to get the records. They did a FOIA to get the records for Adam Lanza that divulged exactly what he was on. And what they said, let me find the Patrick Kwanzi, was the assistant general attorney. And it's funny, I thought there was only one. So I called up the state and I had this chat. And the lady said, oh no, there's about 200. And 20 of them work specifically with the Department of Health and Human Services. In other words, the Department of Health and Human Services in each state work with, get this, they work with the pharmaceutical industry to make sure that their products are being disseminated and used, such as your vaccines and now pharmaceutical drugs, now psych drugs. And so what Patrick Kwanzi said at this hearing was, let me find the exact what he said. It was just amazing. What he said was that he said, and I quote, in referring to the release of vital information, it is harmful because then you can cause a lot of people to stop taking their medications, quote, unquote. In other words, they didn't want to release, they have not released the records, the medical records of Adam Lanza. And the reason is because if people associate what happened to him, what he did, with their medications, then, as Patrick Kwanzi said, and I quote, it is harmful because then you can cause a lot of people to stop taking their medications, unquote, which is pretty much admitting that Adam Lanza was on psych drugs. There's other things, too. For instance, he was, I believe he had akathisia. Now, akathisia is a result of somebody who has been on psych drugs, and they have this neurological damage, and it can happen to you. It can cause you Bell's palsy if you try to go off. But what it actually does is that it causes you to feel very restless, to want to move your feet a lot. And Adam Lanza drove his car, the one that his father purchased the car, the black Honda. It was part of the divorce agreement that he would purchase this car for Adam. And it was in Nancy's name. Anyway, what happened is that he would go to the theater over in Danbury, and he would play this game called Dance Dance Revolution. And you watch this video, and then you follow the video and put your feet where the video says. Now, he would play this game for 8 to 10 hours at a time. And he also had a home version of Dance Dance Revolution. And the other thing, too, the reason that another indication that he was absolutely on psych drugs is that he was very sensitive to the light. Now, do any of you remember Del Shannon?
Afraid I do, yes.
Do you know that he killed himself?
No, I didn't.
He was on Prozac. He was just feeling very anxious.
Sure.
And but his career was going really well. His marriage was going real well. So he went to the doctor, and the doctor, any doctor will prescribe any psych drug. You don't have to go to a psychiatrist to get a psych drug. Your doctor can prescribe it. All they have to do is look at the algorithm, and they look at the symptoms, and they say, oh, let's put you on Prozac, or let's put you on this, or put you on that. So Del Shannon went, and he got a prescription for Prozac. And I believe it was 6 days later, he was in North Dakota, and he was doing a show there. And he was just having a terrible time.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. His real name was Charles Westover. Okay. But he was on Prozac, and he was just really in distress.
Yes.
And he killed himself on February 8th, 1990. And his doctor had prescribed Prozac. And his wife testified at this hearing about Prozac. He never would have done that. He'd only been on it for just a very short period of time. And one of the symptoms that he had, and his last concert was in North Dakota. It was February 3rd, 1990 in Fargo, North Dakota. He was sensitive to the light. He was sweating profusely. He killed himself 5 days later. And he had the very same issues that Adam Lanza seems to have suffered, including akathisia, light sensitivity. And in the official report, we have images of Adam Lanza's bedroom, where he has put black plastic over the windows. And he stopped riding his bike. When he's about 13, he stopped riding his bike. He stopped going outside. He stopped rock climbing with his dad. He stopped doing everything that he used to love outside. He was sensitive to the light, so he put this black plastic over the windows. And yet, the hoaxers in the alternative media never address that. They've shown pictures of his bedroom, and they say, oh, he was doing this or that, and he doesn't have a bulletin board, so he's strange or just ridiculous. He doesn't have an animal. No, but they totally miss the black plastic. They totally ignore the fact that he had a home version of Dance Dance Revolution.
Right.
They totally ignore all these symptoms that he obviously had.
Well, I can vouch for Prozac, Deanna. I did take it myself, and I took it for a few days, and I thought, screw this, this is messing me up. I was getting very anxious, terrible anxiety attacks, and I stopped. Now, my brother, on the other hand, he took Prozac, and he felt great for a while, and then he stopped them again. So whether he used them short-term and they worked for him, I can't recall. But I took them for a short spell of time, and I stopped them quick because they were awful. They were making me very anxious and screwed up. I have to say that is what I got from Prozac, folks.
Right. Do you know that 50,000 people, according to Dr. Healy, who is in, I believe he's in Wales, 50,000 people have committed suicide while taking Prozac. There were suicides during the clinical trial. Okay. There was only 286 people in the clinical trial, and they had to end it early because of the suicide ideation.
And is this
now, it's knocking at everybody the same way.
No.
Okay?
No.
Is it
still around, Deanna?
Yes.
It's still on the market?
Yes.
Okay.
The only way that when psychiatrists say, oh, you have some sort of chemical imbalance, the only way you can judge a person's chemical imbalance is during an autopsy. It's a way of, Merck said, the head of Merck said, we want to be able to sell everybody our product. And so what they have done is medicalized our emotions. Everybody gets sad. Everybody gets anxious. Everybody has moments. What people used to do is that they would talk to their neighbor. They would talk to their friends. They would talk to their family. People aren't talking anymore. They are isolating themselves, which was what Adam Lanza did. He was isolated. Totally isolated. The only time that he went out was to go and play Dance Dance Revolution. And he was isolating himself. And when you are isolated, you can think up some pretty awful things. And you're not getting the help that you need. People used to be able to talk about, gosh, I'm really unhappy about this. But now, if you're unhappy, the first thing the doctor wants to do is give you a medication to make you happy. Well, no, you need to deal with why you're unhappy and work through it. But this occurred after 1945, that they decided that they were going to put as many people as possible on psych drugs. And now, with this incident, you're going to have people saying, well, the reason that this happened is because Adam Lanza didn't have access to psych drugs. And also, we need to insure more people. We need more people to have insurance so that they can have access to psych drugs. Well, the problem with the Affordable Care Act is that it used to be that if you couldn't afford a drug or prescription, you just didn't get it. That was just the way it was. But now, if everybody's forced to have insurance, everybody is forced to be involved in this program, they say, well, you have to have it because this is what the algorithm says, and you're going to have to take this drug. So when you look at the Affordable Care Act, the Affordable Care Act does not mean that you have more access to health care. It means that the medical industry and the pharmaceutical industry have more access to your body.
Yeah.
And there's more screening. More children are going to be screened. Now, can you imagine, seriously, putting an infant on Prozac?
No, not at all. Not at all.
But that's what they're doing. They are saying, let's catch this in the bud. Let's get these infants on the drugs that they need so that we can help these children before they turn out to be Adam Lanza. So you have to look at the composition of the commission that decided all of this stuff after Sandy Hook. And unless you look at the commission and see who was on that commission, including NAMI, who is funded by, they had a representative from NAMI, and NAMI is totally funded by the pharmaceutical industry.
That's NAMI, not MAMI.
NAMI. N-A-M-I. NAMI.
Okay.
It sounds a bit like mammies then. Like,
yeah.
That's what we were worried about.
Yeah. Just going back again, Deanna, just a few more questions. I'll try and get as much of these in.
Sure.
But it says that the medical examiner asserts that all wounds were caused by a rifle or other long weapon.
No, I said long gun. Long gun. Okay.
Yeah, right, or rather a long weapon. And then police FBI say that the school was littered with .223 rifle casings.
And that was from the AR-15. Okay. That is what he took into the school. He left the rifle in the front seat of his car. And when the investigators got there, when the detectives got there, they took that rifle and put it in the trunk to secure it. And the AR-15 was found in the school, and the barrel, you can see the barrel was just, it was white because it had been so used, heated. What he did was he taped two 60 bullet magazines together so that he could have, and it wasn't an assault weapon. It was a semi-automatic.
Okay. But it said he was found dead in the school with handguns.
He was. He took two handguns in with him, plus the AR-15.
Right.
And he used one of the handguns to do himself in.
Okay. So you're saying then that the police took the rifle out and put it into the
car? No. He took two long guns, two rifles, AR-15, and he left one of the long gun in the car, in the front seat. When the police arrived, they took that long gun and they secured it in the trunk. Then they went in and the AR-15 was found in the room where he was, along with the Glock and the other, the Sauer pistol that he had. I think it was Sauer. S-A-U-E-R.
Okay. And then another one, the hospital went into lockdown and cleared four trauma rooms, but only received three patients. Two of them dead, children, according to the official story, and one mildly wounded adult.
Right.
Is that the normal procedure, or that sounds a bit?
Well, if you're dead, you go to the morgue. The toe tag said morgue. If you're dead, you go to the morgue.
Okay.
You don't go to the hospital.
Yeah, well,
and there were people.
According to the official story, that two dead children were sent there to this trauma room.
No, two children were sent there that died.
Okay. All right.
Now, if that's not the official story, that's what you heard on YouTube, that two children were taken to the hospital, but they died there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, how could you keep this quiet in such a small town, Deanna? Were there, you know, there was obviously other witnesses or friends?
Of course, there were numerous witnesses, and they were all, they all gave testimony. It's in the official report.
Which no one's looked at.
Which nobody's looked at.
But then we hear reports of, you know, there was a Super Bowl game where there was pictures are.
Okay, that was the fourth grade choir. And you can see pictures of the fourth grade choir, when they were practicing, rehearsing for the school concert, in 2012 at the school. In the school, they were rehearsing, and they are the exact same children who went to the Super Bowl. They weren't anybody else. They were the fourth grade choir, period.
Hmm. Okay, well,
seriously, if they're going to try and pull a hoax, do you really think that they would? I don't know how anybody can say, for instance, Noah Posner was filmed in the lobby of the school they had a book fair every year. He was filmed with his book. He was filmed with a particular t-shirt on that was created, produced in 2011. Okay? He was there at the book fair. If you look at the metadata on the photo, it says, I believe it's November 9th or something, 2012. Okay, so that's a timestamp on Noah Posner. He was there. And then you have somebody saying, oh no, he sang in the choir at the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. You can only get away with this kind of nonsense if people haven't looked at the official report.
And then what about the picture of, was it Posner again, seen in Pakistan, where a lot of children
were killed? Okay, that was the exact same picture. That was a school picture. And what that was a couple, it wasn't people who were killed in Pakistan. It was somebody that put together a blog that was talking about all these children that were killed, not in Pakistan, but throughout the world. And they put his picture there. He wasn't in Pakistan. He was in Newtown. He was slaughtered. He had an open casket. His funeral was an open casket. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very complicated one. This really is. I mean,
it's only complicated if you've been fed a bunch of lies that you now have to go through and figure out. Okay, and see, people have accepted all of these things, all of these claims, and viewed them as truth, and it's hard when you think something happened, and now you find out it didn't. So the best way of finding out that you have been brainwashed is when you emerge from that brainwashing.
What took you to the Sandy Hook story in the first place, Deanna?
The fact that I was going through this video and I found, because if somebody said, well, you don't know all the material, well, I just wanted to know, okay, what material don't I know? Is there something I'm missing here? And so I started critiquing this video. I found that the video was looped. There was a bunch of lies in the video. They said that the school was closed in 2008, but this was a production of the Newtown Bee. They were having this back to school, kind of a thing, celebrating back to school in 2009. Well, if the school was closed in 2009, how could they be making a video, in 2008? How would they make a video for 2009? If the school was closed, well, they wouldn't be using the school now, would they?
Yeah.
The school was not closed. In fact, in the video, and in the pictures, in the official reports, you can see that, the school was open. It had, there was coffee brewing in the teacher's lounge. There were magazines in the lobby from 2012. The school was not closed. And in fact, when you see that there's, and I'll put it up on one of my articles, you can see the moving truck that one person said, oh, they moved all this stuff into the school to use it as a prop in October. But then why is the moving truck there when you also see the autopsy tent? What, they're going to move all the stuff into the school at the same time that they're doing these autopsies? No. The moving truck was to move things from Sandy Hook to Chalk Hill Elementary. And they started that immediately so that the children could go to a school that they replicated at Chalk Hill, which was actually closed. And they had to be bused to Chalk Hill. Would you send your child, your beautiful, precious child, back to a school that had this happen? Would you want to live in Jeffrey Dahmer's apartment? Would you want to live in John Wayne Gacy's house? People were saying, oh, they tore it down. They got rid of the evidence. They got rid of the evidence a year later. They didn't get rid of the evidence. They tore the school down. What parent in their right mind would want to send their child to school that happened to in?
staggering.
Yeah. Another question. Why was there such persistent reports that Mrs. Lanza, obviously Adam Lanza's mother, was a kindergarten teacher and that she died at the school, when the new official story is that she was not connected to the school and was killed at home?
That was poor reporting. As I mentioned before, when you have a bunch of people who are there on the scene and you have a bunch of media, the media is going to talk to anybody that they can. And Nancy Lanza was a volunteer at the school when her children attended there. When Ryan attended school and Adam attended Sandy Hook, she was a volunteer. But no, she was not associated with the school in any way, shape, or form. And the Newtown Bee corrected that. But it's like putting the correction on page 20 when it appears on page 1. Everybody remembers what's on page 1, and they never read the retraction.
Right.
What about how?
And then, sorry, Graham, go ahead.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how did he get into the school, Deanna? Surely you got to sign in and things these days.
What they did, they had a monitor system. It did not record. It was not a camera. It was a security system that was put in about 6 years previous.
Yeah.
And what you did was you rang the bell and somebody at the front desk would ring the bell to open the door. He shot his way in, and you can see there's dozens upon dozens upon dozens of pictures, images in the official report showing the hole that he went through, showing that he had to push aside the planter and come in. And some people say, oh gosh, he was just too skinny and too emaciated to have done this. And then you hear others say, oh, he was too big. He couldn't have gotten through that hole. Well, which is it, people? Mm. The hole is very big. It was very big. And there was, you can see blood dripping, on the sidewalk, for when they took this child out. There's webcams. People say, oh, it was a drill because they had porta potties. No, they didn't have porta potties until after 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And the reason that certain organizations send in porta potties is obvious. You don't want people going, you know, urinating on the crime scene. There was no place. You had to have porta potties. And people shouldn't be saying, well, who ordered the porta potties? They should be saying, what drugs was Adam Lanza on?
Sure.
Mm. People are asking the wrong damn question. I'm getting really upset.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I don't usually use profanity, but this is very upsetting. There's been so much nonsense about this event. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. You know, you've obviously put a lot of work into this, and you see what you see, and you can't refute that. And when other people say, no, it's a complete hoax and whatever, I can understand how you feel.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, you're standing alone.
You know, and it's good to get, you know, to get this out, because we're coming up to 5 years nearly now of the anniversary of this. And again, myself and Graham, you know, we're not experts by any means on this. We're just going by what we saw and what we heard. And then, you know, you've done a big work on this. You've done a lot of research on it. And you know, there is a lot of compelling evidence there that you put out there, Deanna, which, you know, is certainly needs to be looked at. Was I pulled in by all of this? What? It's just the whole picture of it, the whole strange behavior of everybody and the whole thing. Just kind of doesn't sit right with me. It just doesn't, you know?
It's because, well, we've all believed in certain events in history. And certain events have permeated the entire country, have become a part of the school school dogma, just because something is widely believed doesn't make it true.
Well, we certainly know that with World War II.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you have done the research, Dan, and we have not. And as we said at the top of the show, if we weren't there. We weren't there, and the people that say, you know, that it was a hoax, they weren't there, no more than the people who agree with you were there. So it's still very open to me. At the end of the day.
Can I ask you, like, has there people who kind of call it out as a hoax at the beginning and whatever, and then read your book, have they kind of reviewed their thinking on the whole thing? Do you know of anybody?
Yes, I do. Mm-hmm. I do. I do know of some people. But it's, as I mentioned before, if you think you know the truth, you're not going to look any further. You're going to have a closed mind. And that is very sad, because when the real test of somebody who's seeking the truth is that when they are presented evidence or facts that contradict their initial assumptions, they are going to look at those facts. They're going to look at the new information. When I first started writing on the internet, which was in 2005, I was thinking Hitler was a bad guy. I was thinking all kinds of things about World War II. But as soon as I started researching, and I've put a disclaimer on many of my web pages now that I no longer think this, and that is what research is. Research, each day you learn something new. You learn something different. That is what research is. You don't just accept something and say, oh, okay, I've got the whole truth, nothing but the truth. And this guy that studied it for 6 days told me what was true, so I'm going to go with him. He's really smart, and he makes a lot of sense. So, yeah, I'm going to believe him. No, that's not the way research works. You learn. You change your mind. You come to some conclusions with good sources, and you cite your sources. Otherwise, it's hearsay. Mm-hmm.
That's why I concentrate. Well, we concentrate mainly here on Jewish power, Deanna. For me, that's where it's at now. It's all Jewish power, be it the pharma industry or history. That's where the problem was. Were there any? I've got something here that they were Jews involved. Wade Johnson and Lenny.
And what?
Wade Johnson and Lenny.
Keith Johnson.
Right.
Lenny Posner is the father of Noah Posner.
Okay. These are Jewish guys.
I don't know about Keith, but I know that Lenny Posner is Jewish. His son was slaughtered. His son was the youngest victim of Sandy Hook.
Okay.
His child is the one that was supposedly in Pakistan with the jacket, and he had an open casket funeral.
Yeah. By the way, that picture from Pakistan, I believe, came out from the BBC.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was in 2014, so it was 2 years later. So it's, yeah. But also talking about Keith Johnson and a few others, they were accused of harassing a lot of people who...
They didn't harass anybody.
I don't know much about this side, but go ahead.
Keith Johnson was one of the... he did real in-depth research. He's a fabulous researcher. He created some videos based on his research, but he based it on the official report. He was threatened so many times with death to his wife and grandchildren. And so he's gone silent. Who wants to have your grandchild killed?
Yeah. Well, that's why I said, when I was speaking about this, sort of situation about people being under pressure, Deanna, I mentioned that maybe, and that is not the case, obviously, from what you're saying now, that maybe you were put under pressure, because who wants dead members of their families? It seems to me that researchers and people like myself can only go so far.
And then the truth fears no investigation has always been my motto, and I notice it's your motto too.
Yeah, it's mine.
I have always been about the truth. I've had a good life. Besides that, who would pressure me to write about the truth and expose Big Pharma?
Yeah.
You think Big Pharma's gonna hire, you think Big Pharma, approached me and said, hey, we want you to write about this, so that we can be exposed that we're trying to lobotomize every man, woman, and child in America? You think they came and said that? No. This whole nonsense that it didn't happen is benefiting Big Pharma. Because it's one thing for a teenage boy to go into a school and shoot five or six kids or one kid. But when you have a person that goes into a school and shoots up 20 innocent, precious children, people are going to say, what happened? What happened? Why did that happen? But if a lot of people say, oh, it was a hoax, they're not going to ask the question. They're not going to put two and two together. They're not going to figure out that Adam Lanza was on psych drugs and that his psych drugs caused him. In fact, there are black box warning labels on SSRIs, which is includes Prozac and numerous other SSRIs, that say this drug may cause homicide or suicide ideation. And Adam Lanza was enmeshed in what happened at Columbine. He was playing these war games. Even in the fifth grade, he created this booklet about a grandmother who shoots up a bunch of kids. This person was seriously affected from day one, from the minute he was born, from the minute he became a headbanger. He wouldn't communicate. He went on Ritalin, Prozac, whatever else he was on. But we don't know, because Patrick Kwanzi said, well, if we tell you what he was on, there's going to be too many people that won't take their meds. Now, what does that tell you?
I think you're making
really.
I think you're making a lot of fair points, Deanna. I really do. As I said, we don't do psyops and things like that. It's just not our thing. I just want to kick Jewish power at every opportunity. But what you've said have made a lot, I've made some sense, and I think it should make people to be more critical thinking about it. You know, there's both sides of the story, and it needs to be processed. As far as I'm concerned, it certainly needs more looking at. People should maybe give, you know, I think they should read your book. But then again, I'd be accused by people who would, disagree with you that, I'm trying to push your book. I'm not trying to push anything. I'm just saying there's a lot of information in there that people need to look at before they come to any conclusion.
Okay, in the total patient tracker database for 2013, the following figures were given. This isn't 2013. Almost 250,000 children, 0 to 1 year old, were on anti-anxiety drugs such as Xanax, Clonopin, and Ativan. There are 26,406 0 to 1 year olds who are on antidepressants such as Prozac, Zoloft, and Paxil. This is in 2013. And so you have to question yourself. what they're saying, what the psych drug industry is saying. We've got to get more kids, more children. I hate to say kids, it means goats. We have to get more children on our drugs so that we can control them so this won't happen again.
Sure, so they're doing the exact opposite of what they want.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and I had a question from another listener. He says he'd be keen to debate you on his show because he believes the whole thing is a hoax. Would you be interested?
It depends on who he is.
His name, he goes by the name of Ogner. Don't know if you know of him.
I do know of him, but I don't usually do debates. I would do a debate. Here's how I would do a debate. And this was offered to another gentleman who has written a book. He wrote his book after I wrote mine. And I said, okay, I'll do the debate if it's objective. And this is what we decided, or what I said I would do, is to have a totally objective moderator, that each person would be given 25 questions, that they would choose 20 questions, and they would be given these questions 2 weeks in advance, and that these people would then have a certain amount of time to answer these questions in relative to each other's book. In other words, I have a copy of this gentleman's book. He has a copy of my book. And that would be the only fair, objective debate that I don't like fighting or contesting or yelling. I'm more of a listener. And I know that the debates that I've listened to in the past have been whoever yells the loudest usually wins the debate. Doesn't matter what their facts are, whoever yells the loudest. And I'm not a yeller. I just think that debates need to be objective. They need to be well moderated. And the debates that I've listened to previously were not well moderated. They're very biased.
Okay, well.
And of course, Ogner would have to also read my book, and then I would expect to be able to read his.
Right.
Fair point.
I don't think he has a book on the subject.
Okay.
I don't think so, unless he might have a blog or something on it, but I'm not sure. But okay. We'll put out to him anyway and see what he says, and if he's agreeable, that'd be interesting to hear, you know. I mean, have you debated the likes of Jim Fetzer and others like that?
No, he won't debate me. He was presented with that concept of an objective debate. He blew up and said that it was too structured. So.
Well, we've run.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny that we've never had a reasonable debate here. Because, as you said, Deanna, I did listen to the debates a good few years ago. I had to just walk away from it because it was too much.
It wasn't a debate. It wasn't moderated well.
Yeah, so I just left it as it was. I couldn't be bothered anymore. You know,
I wouldn't subject myself to that. That's abusive. I wouldn't subject myself to that.
Yeah, see, for me, I'm more concerned with what's going on today, what's happening now. You know, for example, here in Ireland, we have an eviction agenda to take private property and throw people onto the streets. Uh-huh. We have an agenda to bring in half of the third world and put them into those houses.
Oh my gosh.
We have this. Is going. These are things that affect me, and I can see these things
are
happening. So I've been to the courtrooms. I'm fighting it myself.
I'm so sorry. That happened in Germany too.
Yeah. So this is what I tend to concentrate on. So when I look at certain events, sure, I look at it and I'll kind of decide. And if I really am interested, if I have some kind of a vested interest in it, I look at it. But Sandy Hook, I had no real, what you call, emotional connection to it or anything.
Sure.
I just looked at it out of interest and I kind of went with the hoax narrative.
Yeah, me too.
And, you know, I'm still, you know, I have to say, after listening to you, you know, I have to think again now because I have to, because
Yes.
As you say, you have to.
This will affect Ireland. This has already affected Britain, England. This is a worldwide thing.
Yeah.
This is worldwide.
Yeah, and again, going back to the big pharma issue, again, I have a very personal connection with that because my dear late wife back in 2008 committed suicide on an overdose of Effexor antidepressants, right? So.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, but, you know, that was a big thing, you know. But what I've done from that, it's made me stronger because I've actually saved two people who were on the verge of committing suicide. I helped them wean them off those drugs, and those two guys are living good, straight, normal lives now because of
good.
That.
And see,
so
that was
something good comes out of it, you know. So
sure.
We have to. This is what I like to focus on more on the real stuff that's happening. You know, families are going without food because they can't afford to pay their mortgages. There's a real austerity thing going on. We've been told that the economy is booming again, but that's absolute nonsense. It's
of course it is.
Certain areas, and it's so. This is what I see at the coalface just by dealing with it.
Sure.
All these other events that are happening. Yes, I'm interested because I'm curious.
Okay.
But I won't, you know, until I actually have the facts right in front of me, unless I've seen it, I've witnessed it for myself, can I say?
You have. This, we can't look at this as an event. We have to look at what has happened and what caused this event and what is causing all of these other suicides, including in your family. Those drugs cause suicide ideation.
Yeah. I know I saw that myself on the, on the box. Yeah.
Yes.
As the side effects. Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm well aware of this. I'm totally, anybody at all who's got a problem with it, I try and help with Big Pharma, you know.
Yes.
I found that if you get on a good proper diet and exercise and
use MMS.
Eating MMS, that's a good and you know, there's things that people can do and take control back of their own lives, and that's the problem.
Right.
People are being made sick deliberately so they can't fight back.
That is what the American Medical Association, the insurance companies, and the pharmaceutical industry is doing. And those are the big three that decide what is wrong. They decide all the decisions. They train the doctors. They decide what pills to give according to the algorithm. They're treating patients. They're not curing patients. They're treating them. And at least 880,000 people a year die just in this country because of their interaction with the medical industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, Deanna, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
It's my pleasure. Like I said, I followed you when I was chasing Dennis around the internet, and I've enjoyed your work. Please keep it up. And you've given people, if you're going to be critical, there has to be critical thinking. And I think you've given information tonight to make people to go and take another look at this if that is their thing, you know.
Sure.
But it's been great to have you on, and we've actually run over time, but it doesn't matter. There's no one following me. Who could? Deanna, thank you. thank you so much for coming on, and we welcome you to come back, and if anyone wants to do a debate, and we can set something up, that we would be glad to do that. But for now, Deanna, thank you so much for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you so much for asking me.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay, folks, thank you very much. That's Deanna Spingola. It's Bryzer and me, the Graham Hart Show here at Cornwall Revolution Radio. Thank you so much for your company. To the guys in the chat room, we're putting questions as well. We really appreciate it. And we'll leave you with the most famous song that's been out since 2015. And we'll hope to you'll be tuning in with us again next week. From Ruff's, Brian, me, and Deanna, a good night.
Bye.
Bye. Thank
good
you.
Night.
Hey, hi, hi.
What?
I think the Goyim know. That's
does the Goyim don't know. I think they know, man. They don't know.
They know.
The Goyim know.